So we're going to start off here tonight. I kind of thought this was funny. Everybody's heard the Confucius things, and I won't do the mocking of Confucius because I was like, well, why do people do that? But to see and listen to the wicked is already the beginning of wickedness. And I'm like, well, and that's pretty accurate. That's pretty accurate when you think about that, okay, to do that. And so as we do a sharing here tonight, this is nothing that's really going to be new, but maybe a couple new things added to it. But it's how do we build ourselves up? I think it's thermodynamics, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember. I was racking my brains earlier today trying to remember it. But it's the theory that when you leave something alone, that when you come back to it, its condition or state has not improved. Okay, it's declined. And so think of it this way. If you have a garden, okay, and you look at the farmer's gardens right now, after they till it up, you see 100 or 1,000 acres, and you look out on it, and they've tilled it up and put new seeds in there, and there's not a weed out there. You're like going, how the heck do they do that? That's impressive. I mean, when Donna did her little garden, I'm like going, it was a constant battle. There was always some amount of weeds in there. But if you left that farm, that 100 acres, and you came back 5 years later, do you think that everything's planted in neat rows and everything's running smooth? Or do you think it's overgrown and the trees are now growing into it? Weeds have overtaken it. I saw a thing on TV the other day about some of the lost pyramids in Mexico. And they found these by planes flying over them. Enormous, enormous pyramids and ruins that were completely overgrown. The jungle had taken them over. And that's how they found them, is when they're flying over them. They're like going, holy cow, what's that? And so the theory is that if things decline, unless they're tended to, why is it any different with us with the Word and with our relationship to Christ and with our relationship to Yahweh? If we don't tend to it and we don't take care of it, it's going to deteriorate as well. It's something that has to be maintained as well. He that walketh with the wise becometh wise, but the friend of the dullards becomes foolish. Righteous and the lawless. So we're going to kind of take a comparison on this. And we're going to look at a couple scriptures that are going to kind of go over this as well. The righteous and the lawless. And so a lot of times Yahweh will say, well, I will give you this if you do this. But if you refuse this, this is what's going to happen. So it's you know, hey, pick which showcase you want. Okay, which one are you going to go on? Because you're going to get one or the other. And inaction means that you pick this one. And so that's what we're going to kind of look at. Contrast between the wise and the scoffer, eating good fruit or feeding on violence, righteousness that will guard you or the lawlessness that overthrows, light of the righteous and the rejoicing, or the lawless, the light goes out, sound discretion brings about favor, the treacherous, the path is rugged, use of knowledge versus the unwise that are spreading rumors and folly. The righteous eat to satisfy, the belly of the lawless shall want. And so you see that. I mean, you can see movie stars that have this insatiable desire to fill something that's missing in their lives. Okay? Where somebody who has, you know, that's just barely getting by but is content and is happy. And you can see the difference. And so having the one does not bring about happiness. And so that's what they're talking about. The belly of the lawless continually wants. Doesn't matter what you feed it, it's still going to want. He that walketh with the wise become wise, but the friends of the dullards become foolish. Okay? And that's what we kind of started off with. So let's take a look here. We're going to start off here, and I'm going to read this, and we're going to kind of analyze it. But let's go to Proverbs 13, and that is going to be on page 619. So one of the cool things that I've been trying to do here for the last while is first thing in the morning, it's the first fruits go to Yahweh. Okay? The whole time in the Old Testament, the sacrifices, everything, the first fruits of the livestock, of everything went to Yahweh. That was required. Now, why is that? Did Yahweh really need those things? No. To me, it's an act of faith and an act of obedience that they would take the best of the livestock. Okay? And that's what was offered. Okay, Yahweh's not eating them. It was a sweet smell to him. But it was a sacrifice that you gave. And, you know, I could imagine there'd be times you're like going, you know, this is really good breeding stock with this ox. Very good breeding stock. And then think of how big he is compared to the others. He's the best of them. And yet you put your faith and your trust into Yahweh to give this. And so it's the same way. I'm like going, okay, you know what? Can I get up an extra 30 minutes earlier and read? Read about 3 chapters. That's it. I can read 3 chapters in a morning. And that's first fruits. And that's where I look at it to do this. So as you look at it, one thing that people can do is Proverbs, what is it, 30 chapters, 31 chapters, okay? That's one a day. That's reading one chapter a day is a great way to start. And Proverbs is just loaded with little things to kind of help guide. So in chapter 13, verse 1, and I'll go ahead and start reading this. I might have somebody help me out here as we go. A wise son cometh of a father's correction, but a scoffer heareth not a rebuke. Now, we're going to listen to this when we start in chapter 13, and pretty much when we end in chapter 13, it's talking about the son, okay? Talking about a son or the children or a person. Think about this. A son cometh to a father's correction, but a scoffer heareth not a rebuke. Of the fruit of his mouth shall a man eat what is good, but of the soul of the treacherous shall be sated with violence, a desire, a craving for violence. He that watches his mouth guardeth his soul. He that openeth wide his lips shall it be his ruin. The sluggard desireth, but his soul hath nothing. But the soul of the diligent shall be enriched. And I love the poetic on this. Sometimes it tells at the beginning, if you do this, it's this. But if you do that, it's this. And here it's doing exactly backwards. The sluggard desireth, but his soul hath nothing. But the soul of the diligent shall be enriched. In other words, they gave the what you don't want to do first on that verse. A word of falsehood the righteous man hateth, but the lawless causeth shame and disgrace. Righteousness guardeth the man of blameless way, but the lawless overthroweth the sinner. There is who feigneth himself rich, yet hath nothing at all, who pleadeth poverty, yet hath great substance. Would somebody read like 8 through 12 for me, or 13?
Sure. The ransom of a man's life is his wealth, but the poor heareth not rebuke. The light of the righteous rejoiceth, but the lamp of the lawless goeth out. Only by pride doth one cause contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Wealth gotten by greed diminisheth, but he that gathereth by little increaseth. Hope deferred sickeneth the heart, but a tree of life is desire fulfilled.
Somebody read there for me through like 13 through 17.
He that despiseth a matter shall get pledged thereto. But he that revereth a commandment, the same shall be recompensed. The instruction of the wise is a wellspring of life by departing from the snares of death. Sound discretion yieldeth favor, but the way of the treacherous is rugged.
Let's hold here for a second, because I want to point out a few things. What we're discussing here today is the instruction of the wise. Okay, remember, it started off the son who cometh to the father's correction. Well, who wants to go and get correction? Hey, tell me what I'm doing wrong, would you please? I'm all ears, you know, and nobody wants to hear that, and people get offended by when that happens. And so here we are again in 13. Sound discretion. Sound discretion yieldeth favor. Okay? Go ahead, Wendy. I'm sorry. In verse 16.
Where do you want me to read to?
16 through like 18.
Every prudent man maketh use of knowledge, but a dullard spreadeth folly. A lawless messenger falleth into mischief, but a faithful herald bringeth healing. Poverty and contempt for him that neglecteth correction.
And that's it. What happens if you neglect the correction, the instructions? What happens? Okay, it tells you over and over again, if you take the correction, if you take the instructions, here's what you will get. If you don't, okay, poverty and contempt are for him that neglecteth correction. I'm sorry, 18b.
But he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. A desire fulfilled is sweet to the soul, but it is an abomination to the lawless to depart from evil. He that walketh with the wise becometh wise, but the friend of dullards becometh foolish. Evil pursueth sinners, but unto the righteous shall good be recompensed. A good man leaveth an inheritance to children's children, but laid up for the righteous is the wealth of the sinner. Much food is in the fallow ground of the poor, but there is that is swept away for want of justice. He that withholdeth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him carefully correcteth him. The righteous eat it to satisfy his appetite, but the belly of the lawless shall want.
That's it. And in 14, again, one more time, he that withholdeth his rod hateth his son. In other words, if he is not correcting, not taking care of the problems with that, doesn't care for the son, hateth his son, but he that loveth him carefully correcteth him. And I love that. What's the carefully corrected? What does that mean, to carefully correct? Is there a way to correct that's not careful?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess when we look at it, the words are important. So carefully correcteth him. In other words, there's an art to be able to correct, a way of being able to do it. We're going to kind of take a few looks at those here. This is the sound thing here. And this is, as we go through, my teaching is about iron sharpening iron and what it takes for that to take place. Okay, and so I thought that as I was thinking about this, I was watching that same show that I was watching about the pyramids that they found in Mexico. I can't remember the name of them. But they found this, it was a flint rock that was green. And it was almost see-through, like a glass, like an emerald-colored glass. It was beautiful. Yeah, and it was in this volcano that they found. It was beautiful, very valuable. And they found all these knives and things that they had, and they were showing them, and they did an experiment with one. The guy chipped away and found one, and then they dug one up that was actually put into a bowl that they think was a to give to the gods or something like that. They found this chamber that was completely untouched. And they pulled it out, and this thing was still so sharp, okay, because it was buried in the dirt, buried in everything, and it was glass. They pulled it out, and they cut through. It was over a quarter-inch piece of leather, and then right down this thing. And I'm like going, that's just incredible. I mean, that just blew me away. But anyways, this was a short video about this, and this is about cutting. So I was going to show it, see if it plays here.
Sometimes when you're out in the wilderness...
What's he's talking about? Because he can't really hear. It's not really playing through there. He's talking about being out in the woods and needing something... needing the sharp thing, and he's using flint. And flint is a generic term because there's about 7 or 8 different rocks that you can use for this. And so he shows you how to do it. And there's an art for being able to do this that the Indians used to do. We used to do this in Boy Scouts as well.
Flint, and this can be, flint is kind of a generic name for a number of different materials, turf, chalcedony, jasper, etc. We'll just call it flint for the purpose of communication. The other thing you'll need is a hammer stone, a little round cobblestone out of a creek or some such thing. You could even use another nodule of flint.
And that's what they determined a lot of times they would do, is they'd use flint against flint, because then you almost double your odds of getting something good out of it.
Various pieces of flint that will create a very sharp edge if struck right. The key to getting to knocking a good piece off is to find an angle that's a little sharper than 90 degrees.
So if you can hear that, he's talking about that. You're putting it at an extreme angle, and you're going to hit it to get it to flip and break off so that you get a sharp, jagged edge. So watch how he does this.
Practice and experimentation. But before long, you'll be knocking off nice, sharp pieces of usable rock. Like that one. Yeah, I've done that, baby. Has a cortex, which is certainly less than ideal, but it's sharp. If we can knock another one off there, it'd be even sharper. Let's try this spot right here. That's a good one. Look at that piece. Very nice. Good sharp edge.
Okay, so it kind of makes me laugh. He's sharpening it with another piece of hard rock. Okay.
Take a little getting used to. I don't like handling a normal steel knife. Once you get used to it, they're very, very effective.
And that's pretty much it there.
Don't cut yourself.
But we did this in Boy Scouts, which was kind of a cool. It was to get one of the merit badges, and it was for making arrowheads. And so we actually made arrowheads, and they weren't very pretty, but we did it. And you used, after you get the piece of flint off, you get something that kind of resembles that the piece you're looking for. Then you actually put it in a piece of leather, just like this. You could either put it in your hand or on your knee, and you would put it on there, and you take an antler point. And you'd use antler point, and you do all these little pushes into it, chipping off little teeny pieces at a time to make a serrated blade. And that's what that is. Okay, you see all these jags in here? These are all from them tapping them and chipping them and a piece coming off of that to make a very, very sharp thing. Well, now, the point of this is, where I'm going with that is you're using two hard things. It's not something where you're using, you know, fine, you know, linen or fine, you know, cotton or even leather at this point to bring a sharpness to these. You're sharpening these two things with two hard substances to get to this point. Okay? This is what we're looking at. Let iron by iron become sharp. And so when you think about that, when we talk about correction, okay, we all seen the movies where the two swords are hitting each other and sparks are flying off and everything. They're probably not sharpening each other when they're doing that, okay? That's not the right angle. It's not the right approach. It's not the way to do it. And so when we look at correctly correcting something, there's a right angle to be at to do this so that you're not causing damage, but you're changing what you're doing. But by virtue of that, we all have to agree that, hey, something's going to come off. Maybe a little bit uncomfortable, it might be a little bit tough, and we have to kind of subject ourselves to it. Why should we care to be sharpened or to sharpen others? Okay? And so that's where a lot of people are like going, who really cares? What's the big deal? Okay, what's the big deal? And that's where we're going to look at. Let's go to 1 Peter. 1 Peter 2:9, page 239. Page 239, Peter, 1 Peter 2:9. Will somebody read that there on page 239 for me?
Yes, I will. But ye are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for a peculiar treasure, that the excellences ye may tell forth of him who out of darkness hath called you into the marvelous light.
That's it. So we have to look at it as a calling, that we have something that's unique in order to do this. And so, you know, the person who takes, think about what iron does when you put it and submerge it in salt water. What happens to it? Okay? It corrodes and it starts to go away, or you leave it out. I mean, if I have a 22 and I leave it outside through a whole winter, I come back out to it, a lot of tending to get that back into shape. And so the same way that we have to do that, that we are a peculiar race, chosen race, a royal priesthood for a peculiar treasure. And so we have to look at ourselves and see ourselves the same way that Yahweh sees us, the same way that Christ sees us, so that we can do this. And so you think about that as a razor, because fine-tuning of a razor, everybody looks at it and, you know, you can get an old razor and it will still cut you pretty good, but then you go to shave with it and you're like, oh man, this thing's terrible. And you can fine hone a razor with what? A leather strap. Okay, that's how they actually, when you see the old movies where they're sharpening, they're doing it under a piece of leather, back and forth with a correct angle. If they went the wrong direction, they're going to dull the knife. Okay, and so I look at that, the whole thing is, as iron sharpens iron, that there is a formula to be able to do it and to be effective, correct. Correction, if you will, on how to do it and when it requires the leather. Obviously, if you take the piece of iron out of the salt water and start rubbing the leather over it, you're just going to trash the piece of leather you have, and you will do nothing for the piece of iron. It will not sharpen it whatsoever. But when you get it to that point where you're fine honing it and tuning it, that it can be a different thing that can be done for it, that they're at that point. And so as we do this, it's a whole correction of how we go about it. Let's flip back to Proverbs 27. Proverbs 27, verses 17 through 19, page 631. So page 631 on the top right side.
Can Mel read that?
She sure can, baby. How about you do that? You got it? Page 631.
17 through 19?
Yes, please.
Let iron by iron become sharp, and let a man sharpen the face of his friend. That he guardeth the fig tree shall eat the fruit thereof, and he that watcheth over his master shall be honored. As in water face answereth to face, so thy heart of man to man.
Okay, so let's look at that here. So we're sharpening. Iron sharpens iron, okay? And sharpen the face of your friend. When we look at that, in the beginning when we read it where it says that he that spared the rod hated his son, okay? Obviously the son is a friend, and so he that sharpened the face of your friend, that would you watch a friend go and do something that you knew was going to be extremely harmful? Like if you saw them walking towards, you know, a manhole and they were reading their phone and you saw, would you not stop them to tell them? Of course you would. Okay, it's a friend. You do it to a stranger, let alone your friend. You'd be like going, hey, be on guard, be watching out. And so that's what we're looking at. But here's the kind of the cool part in this as we break this down. So let me put this in here. Face in the mirror, okay, is the reflection that we're talking about. As in water, face sees face. Okay, when you look down in the water, that was your mirror. Okay, there was no mirror back in those days. That's how you looked down and you saw it. As in the water, face to face, so heart of man to man. The heart reflects the man. And that's what we're referring to. And so as we look at this here, we're able to see how Yahweh is able to see us as well. The heart revealeth the man. What sharpens me and what dulls me. Sorry. The sharpening and dulling both come from contact. And so everything with this, you can't sharpen something without physical contact, can you? I mean, it's basically, it has to come together. Two things have to come together in order for that to happen. And so when people, you know, prayer is fantastic, prayer is great. But when it comes to sharpening, it takes the contact. It takes the contact for this. And it takes the diligence. And it's going to take sometimes where it's a little bit uncomfortable. We are called to teach, encourage, set an example, explain, exhort, urge, and press upon each other towards righteousness. Friend to friend, like I think about David and Jonathan, okay, where one is going to mentor another, even with Moses to Aaron, you know, that's brother to brother. But you see this between there, where they, hey, I need to tell you this. This is what you're doing is incorrect, and what I see, you need to change this, or you need to be able to do this, or hey, what's taking you so long? I would see with a person, you used to be in this point, and now what's happened to you? I don't see you at that point anymore. Where did you go? What's happened to you? You need to get back on that course that you were on, because that course that you were on, you were bringing a ton of light. And now I look at you and I don't see it. And so these are the types of things that a friend to friend would do. Elder men to younger men. Obviously, this is the sharing of knowledge that we're required to do. Sharing knowledge, I think about that with raising somebody or training somebody. You know, with watching the sports with the kids. You know, the coaches know how the game's supposed to play. You hope they know how to play the game. Okay? But they're imparting this onto the kids. And I thought about that when I helped coach, you know, in baseball. You know, and the kid hits the ball and he runs, run! And the kid runs for second base. You know, or you tell the kids that they're playing the field and the ball gets hit, hit the ball! And the whole field starts running for the ball and you're just like going, I know how to do this. But it's not that I know how to do it. It's for me to impart it onto them. Why? So that they can carry that on. So they can go. So it's molding them. It's shaping them. Almost like forging them. You know, when you see they pull the hot iron out and they're pounding it with a hammer on an anvil to reshape it, to remold it. And why? To get it so that you can get that edge onto it. Women with younger women. It also has for older women as well. Teachers and students. Teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I myself have commanded you. In other words, for us to pass on the commandments, that we bring that in. Yes, we know them. Okay, whether or not we do them, you know, it's the same thing like a coach. Yeah, coach knows how to play, but you look at the guy and you're like going, dude, you haven't been on the field in I don't know how many years. You know, I see that pot belly. Are you even sure you got the right two shoes on? And you're telling me, yelling at me, but this is where we look at it, and you're just like going, but he does know how to play it. He knows how it's supposed to be. I think about John Madden back in the days. A dude could throw a clipboard farther than he could throw a football. Okay? But he did know the game. He did know it. Okay? But at the same point, it's passing on that knowledge. He's not going onto the field to play, but for him to pass on that knowledge and to train and to bring people up the same way. And so, teachings observe whatsoever I have commanded to you. Patience and children. Parents, I'm sorry. Patience is with children. Parents and children. Okay? So shall the words which I am commanding thee today be upon thy heart, and thou shalt impress them upon thy sons, and shall speak of them. Okay? And so it's the same way that, yes, we talk about about it. So how many times have we, you know, have you heard about, you know, Noah's Ark or the animals that were on it? And you're like going, but at the same point, what are we doing? We're passing on information. It's the wisdom. It's the same way. How many times did Yahweh tell all the Israelites, remember me, I'm the one who freed you from Egypt. Okay, remember that, please. I'm not telling you to remember it because I'm like trying to poke you, but I am. Remember this. When you start going through your troubles, remember this, and it helps encourage you. And so it's the same way for us, that a lot of times, even as we're instructing the children, or as we're instructing a friend, or correcting somebody, or bringing them, sharpening somebody, that we're like going, hey, you know, a person may be sitting at the same spot for the longest time. And when we used to fly, there was a, and I know I've told this before, but when you would come in to refuel behind one of the tankers, okay, we're in the airplane, and the C-130 was really, it's a fat, slow airplane. So the jet, KC-135, has to slow down, and we're speeding up, okay? We're doing pretty much max volume that we can push out of this thing. And as you get up close to it, what you can't see is the same thing that you feel off of a truck when you go to pass a truck, or a truck passes you and you feel that jolt. Okay, it's a bow wave, if you will, of air, a force of air. And the pilots would get right up to it and couldn't break through it. And they would sit there, and they would push up a little bit more throttle, and they couldn't get past it, and it would hold them there. And you'd be sitting there, we'd be all watching going, oh, for crying out loud. I mean, you're stuck behind us. You've got to bust through that bubble, and you can't see the bubble. But as you get up close to it, then all of a sudden when they get that feel, they'd know exactly when they felt it, that little bit of resistance, and then as soon as they glided into it, it's the same way you feel when you get right behind the truck. You get up close to the truck and you can feel your car buffeting a little bit, and you get in behind it and you're like drafting it. You're like, well, that's it. That's a sweet spot. Same way for us, that you see so many believers that they're back there in that little zone. Okay, they haven't pushed through yet. They have not pushed through, and that's where we're like going, hey, I don't have to, you know, crack you and beat you, but that's a fine honing. Let's get you pushed through. Let's get you past into that sweet zone, into that spot that Yahweh's calling you to be. Okay, Titus 2:7, this is 7 through 8a. In all things, showing thyself as an example of noble works in thine instruction, uncorruptness, gravity, helpful discourse that cannot be condemned. And so this is one of the things that we're doing. Even when we're in between, while we're still, if you will, the same example of the plane coming into the fuel, there'd be times where we would be a little bit early, okay? And the tanker's running a little bit late. And so what would we do? We'd get up there, and they'd immediately start practicing what they knew. Let's get into the pattern. There's a pattern that you're going to refuel in. And you're going to get into this pattern, you're going to get in this groove. And it would be funny because we'd be sitting there, and you'd get, as soon as the pilots would get up to the tanker, it was about a 20-25 mile long track. Okay, that they would fly in. And they'd get to it, and then it would be about a 2-mile turn, and it was like a gigantic racetrack in the sky, and they'd start coming back. And my vice commander is a little guy named Fuss. He had to sit on the phone books to get his to get himself to look up over the windscreen, little teeny guy. And he was a little ball of fire. But he was getting certified. He was one of the last ones in the squadron. Okay, because all the rest, he didn't fly as much as everybody else. So he sat in their seat getting ready to do it, and we're coming around to one of the turns. And as we're getting ready to turn, they are physically locked onto this tanker. The tanker has all these strips. You'll see them if they fly over. There's a strip underneath, and it's directions for what you need to do. It tells you whether you need to come right, come left, if you're too far low, too far high, because there's a sweet spot for that boom to come down, and then it reaches down and plugs into the top of the airplane. Okay? And so we're doing this. Now, he is white-knuckled on the yoke. I mean, but he's doing it, and he's just barely keeping on the yoke, keeping it on it to where we're connected. And he's watching the boomer, okay? He's watching him following the directions, and I'm standing behind him, and we're in a 30-degree bank, okay? Because we're at the end of the racetrack and getting ready to come back around. And I made the comment. I'm like going, man, it's so cool. You don't even realize that you're in a bank. And as soon as I said that, his eyes looked down at the instrumentations and immediately popped off. And then he got mad at me for doing it. He goes, Sauter, shut up. You quit talking. Just quit talking. And I'm like, oh, but it's the same way where you're like, well, if you get fixed in on it, that you're going to be right in the zone. And even during those turns and in those curves, you're focusing on what? The directions. The directions are coming from up above here. This is telling us what to do, and this is the same way. And so by doing this, while we're in the holding pattern, what are we doing? All right, Yahweh, tell me what's up for today. What's on the docket for today? Well, until something comes up, what am I going to do? I'm going to do noble works. I'm going to show myself as noble works. Flip over to Hebrews 10. To to the right here a little ways, and we're going to be on page about 231-ish. It's actually 230, I think. Page 230. And 24 and 25. Anybody else back there want to read?
Well, and let us attentively consider one another to provoke unto love and noble works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, according to the custom of some, but exhorting, and by so much the more as this, by as much as ye behold the day drawing near.
Thank you. That's it. Okay. So again, that we're to be putting ourselves out there for noble works. But what I love about this here is the provoke unto love. Okay? Have you ever heard that? It's almost like an oxymoron. Yeah. I am going to provoke you to love. Well, that doesn't sound very pleasant. Okay? But it's the same way. To provoke unto love and noble works. Well, is there a correct way to provoke? Okay? Or to stir inside, if you will. Think about that way. To stir inside. How, for somebody to do that, and that's where you hear somebody say that, man, this guy is such a good salesman. He could sell a, you know, what was the line from Tommy Boy? A ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves. And you're like going, gross. Okay, but the whole point is that you could convince, that you can steer somebody, that you can provoke somebody to that point. And that's an art to be able to do that. And so this is where we're looking at to provoke unto love and noble works. If you immediately come across somebody pretty harsh, and the person A doesn't have, there's no love between them or no friendship between it, the word still goes out. It still goes out. And they may need it, and it may come back later. It may go into, all right, that's in the inbox, I'll deal with that later. But they're probably chapped. Who the are you? Who are you to tell me what to do? You know, what do you come off with? But to provoke unto love and noble works is the whole key to that. How to do that? What's the art form? Each person's going to be a little bit different, and Yahweh knows. Yahweh knows what a person needs to hear. So it might even start off with a person saying, hey, I just want to pray with you. And while you're praying, and all of a sudden a word comes, a revelation comes, and you reveal something to them, that guess what? This gigantic iron fence that they just put up around themselves is just washed down. It's all taken down, and Yahweh's like going, I know what this person needs. Don't let their physical attributes show what it is, because remember what the mirror shows. The mirror shows the heart. So if we don't see the heart, Yahweh does. And so Yahweh may say, hey, here's what it takes. Here's the secret recipe to get to this, to provoke unto love and noble works for this individual. Okay. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceiving yourselves. Evil communications corrupt gentle manners. Okay, I'm going to also put the King James Version. Okay. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. And so at the same point, while we're trying to provoke to love, we're able to be provoked into unrighteousness as well. Okay? And sometimes people aren't even trying to do that, but who we associate with, who we are taking on as our friends, who we are around, definitely plays a fact into how we react and what we do. And it should be that way, that when we're around those people, it should be to where that those people like going, don't talk like that. You know, it'd be nice if you're around a bunch of people who are maybe not even believers, where they'd be like going, yeah, they refer to you as reverend or pastor, even though they know you're not, but because of your stand and how you outwardly appear, that's yourself holding in the holding pattern. Okay, to where, hey, what's next? Tell me what's next. In the meantime, I'm up and ready to go. I'm ready to go. Okay, let's flip over to Luke. Back here a little bit. We're going to be on about 65. Page 64, actually. Luke 6:45. And Melania, I'll let you read this as soon as you get to it, sweetheart. Actually, why don't you start in 43? And we'll just go 43 all the way through to 46. You can stop at the end of 45.
For a good tree doth not produce worthless fruit, neither again doth a worthless tree produce good fruit. For every tree by its own fruit becometh known, for not of thorns do they gather figs, neither of
bramble bush
do they gather a bunch of grapes. The good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth that which is good, And the wicked man out of the wicked heart bringeth forth that which is wicked. For out of an overflowing of heart speaketh his mouth.
That's it. And so here's the thing. There's a little bit of a secret that somebody can reveal what's in their heart, because what's in their heart normally comes right out through the tongue. And remember all the verses that we've gone over multiple times about the tongue being a little member but steers the ship, okay? And as a fire that comes out, is able to create fires and put out fires at the same time. And so it kind of does let that out. So what comes out of somebody's mouth, but when I say that, it should be for ourselves. What's coming out of my mouth, if I hear something come out of my mouth, I'm like going, I can't believe I just said that. I'm like going, I need to correct my heart. Okay, something's wrong. Something's going on where what just came out of my mouth is foreign to me. I'm like going, where did that come from? You know, and it does. It happens. Everybody goes through that, especially when I'm working on something. But, right, Donna? She's giving me the...
It might fly out the front door, too.
Oh, okay. In Proverbs 22:5, thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. He that guardeth his soul shall be far from them. And so that's where we look at that. We're there to be a rescue. So you think about that almost like on a lifeboat, if you will, that you've got the big ring to throw out to somebody that's out there. Now, if you're yelling at the person, hey, I'm going to throw this to you. No. What? I'm going to throw this to you. It's going to help you. I'm going to rescue you. No. Go away from me. Or even start swimming away from you. You're like, I am going to rescue you. You are going to take this. Okay? There's going to be people who are going to be like going, no, I prefer the wickedness. I would rather have that. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll be right here. If you change your mind, okay, or you start to drown, we'll help you if you need it. But I can't do anything for you if you don't want it. And so there are going to be people. Not everybody is going to be saved. There's going to be a lot of people who refuse it. They don't want it. Okay? They don't want to bow to our Creator. They don't want to bow before Yahushua. That's their choice. They have the ability to do that. For those that do want to do that or don't know, that's where we say that's where we're trying to provoke you into love. But if those people, you know, if they're like, nope, they may say all kinds of foul things and everything else. It still doesn't go out void, but brush the dust off your shoes and go on. Go on to the next one. Because guess what? There's going to be somebody else out there that wants that life raft that you have to throw to them. Genuine interest in those being sharpened is critical. I think that's probably one of the biggest factors where people are going to take it, because even somebody that you talk to, if they lash out at you, they're going to go back and think to themselves, that was pretty crappy of me. This person had my best interest in heart. It kind of made me mad, but I'll tell you what, many, many times that that's happened with me, there's a second conversation that comes up. And that second conversation is night and day different from the first conversation. And so having that genuine where I do care about this person, I do care about you. Okay, my heart goes out for you. I want to help. Okay, I want to do that. In the same way, I have to be that way. If I know somebody just absolutely despises me and they're coming to give me correction, like, yeah, you know, I'll be like going, okay, I need to pray about any of that, because I don't want to miss it if it is somebody. If Yahweh is sending somebody to me, I don't want to miss that. But at the same point, my initial thing is to reject it. But if it's somebody that I know cares about me, I've got to be like going, I will reweigh this and rethink that. Felt by both the sharpener and the sharpenee. Asking yourself honestly, and this is where it comes down to, who are you sharpening? And how are you doing it? How are you sharpening, and who are you sharpening? What is it? If you have kids, it's a gimme. Okay, better be, but that's one thing we're doing. We sharpen the kids to raise them, to teach these things. Okay, who is sharpening? Who is sharpening you? That's another one, because guess what? All of us goes back to the same thing. Think of it as the field. Okay, if the field's not tended to, it's going to get overgrown. It has to be tended to. It has to be sharpened. It has to be weeded. These things have to be pulled out. And how are you being sharpened? How are you allowing yourself to be sharpened? Let's finish here. We're going to go to 1 Thessalonians 2. Fly out of there. 1 Thessalonians 2, page 209. And Lanya, would you want to read these?
Sure.
Okay. It's 7 through 12 on page 209.
7 through 12.
Yes, please.
But we became gentle in your midst, and as though a nursing mother had been as
cherishing.
cherishing her own children. Thus yearning after you, we could have been well pleased to impart unto you not only the glad message of Yahweh, but our own lives also. Because very dear to us have ye become. For ye remember, brethren, our toil and hardship, night and day working so as not to be a burden unto any of you. We proclaimed unto you the glad message of Yahweh. Ye are witnesses, Yahweh also, how kindly and righteously and
blamelessly
unto you who were believing, we were found to behave. Even as ye know how unto each one of you we were as father unto his own children, consoling you and soothing and calling to witness, to the end ye might be walking in a manner worthy of Yahweh, who is calling you unto his own kingdom and glory.
That's it. And so that's the whole thing, is how the art there that they're referring to in this is how they did that, how they felt about them, how they did this, how they poured out, how they at times it was like a mother cherishing their child, or that they were their own sons, that they were the father and these were their sons, how they felt about them. You think about the respect and the love that was between them, and yet the people still needed the counsel. They still needed the correction, just no different than a son or a daughter does, you know. That you're raising them, like as we're talking with Holly, with David, you know, they kind of jumped into this. Okay, never raised children before, sort of giving out pointers here and there, and I'm like going, yeah, all children will do this. This isn't something unusual. You know, you put something on the table, hey, don't touch that. And what's the first thing the kid wants to do? You know, they want to touch it. And why? It's almost in nature to push it to see. And if you let it, what just happened is the child just taught you. The child taught you. This is how it's going to be, okay? You let that go, guess what? Does it really matter that they touch the cup? No, it doesn't, but that's stepping stone one, okay? And stepping stone two now, every one of those that you miss, it's going to be a lot harder to fix. And yes, what do we do? No, I told you not to touch that. Okay, no. And then things have to be different. That's where correction. I said, you kids were no different. I had to do that with you guys. You kids did this to me. And I said, and you learned real quick when I told you that that doesn't mess around. Okay, I don't count to three. Okay, somebody starts counting. I'm going to give you to three. And I'm like going, nope. As soon as the person said that, I got up and you got smacked. Okay, one, smack. Wait a minute. Like, well, you're going to know that this is how it is. And I knew that from my father. My father had so much love that he gave to us. There was never any doubt out on how he felt, but at the same point, we knew when Dad said something, you don't mess around. You better act. You know, I think about that when kids get left. Okay, I'm like going, is it really a problem? No, it's really not, because guess what? We just showed the bar. Set the bar. Here's what happens. You just found out where it is that when it's told that you better do this, you better do that. Okay, you're not going to be left to die or anything else. It just means next time, holy cow, I learned a valuable lesson. Donna had one time where she had to take the kids home from a birthday party at McDonald's. Thank goodness I wasn't there, because it was a free-for-all. And our kids wouldn't behave because none of the other kids were required to behave. And Donna had enough. And so she grabbed them, pulled them out. And they had no lunch, no birthday thing there. The whole store was basically reserved for them. The playground, the whole thing out there, all gone. And the kids came home crying. And Donna was actually to the point of crying. She's like going, I don't know if I was the right thing to do. And I'm like going, are you kidding me? You just made a mark. And they're going to remember this. And a cheeseburger, a chicken nugget, a french fry, and 30 minutes on the playground, that's nothing compared to what just took place. Because things stayed after that. She told them to do something. They knew, if I didn't, here's what happens. Now that's tough. Boy, that's iron sharpening iron. Okay, that's where we look at it and you're like going, whoo boy, and what? That's provoking love, right? Okay, not for the kids' sake, but they know down the road, they know that, hey, this is what happened. So that's where we're going to end on this here. And so it's an art form to be able to do it, but Yahweh knows what it takes. it's each individual person. I can't say that there's a recipe that here's how you do it. Because Yahweh may have for one person, that's funny because I was reading a story a few days ago about a ministry that was a prison ministry, and they went into this prison. It was in Kentucky, and it was a pretty hardcore prison. And the guy was going in there to preach to one of the groups there. And as he goes inside, he goes, and you probably can tell me about that because you were, he was a security guard in one. And when the gate, he says, when it closed, he goes, you're inside now. And he goes, and until somebody unlocks it, you're inside. And he goes, it was a weird feeling to him when he did that because now I'm inside this place. I'm inside this place. And he goes to this place and it's this biker gang. And they're all coming in, and he goes, these guys were enormous. And they were covered with tattoos, had long beards. And he goes, if you saw these guys on the street, you would run. You would get out of the way. And at the same point, he's like going, holy cow. He goes, I can't defend myself against one of these guys, let alone five or six of these guys are coming in there. And they all came in there, grabbed him by the hand, and says, we're going to start off with prayer. Let's start off with prayer. And these guys were some of the prison leaders that were evangelizing within the prison. And Yahweh knew their heart, but on the outside, you look at it, and you're like going, holy cow. Yeah. Give me out. And so that's why I say when Yahweh looks at the heart, Yahweh revealed to me what's in their heart. And if Yahweh says, stay clear, then okay, thank you, Yahweh, I will. And so you can be like, hey, God bless you. You know, I hope things are great with you. But at the same point, he can reveal information to a person, and that person can get a breakthrough right there where it might even catch them completely off guard. Where they're like going, wow, Yahweh really is within you because nobody else would have known that. But anyways, I'm going to go ahead and finish here. We have Billy's birthday.
Yeah. You guys know that's my brother-in-law and my little sister.
Yes. And he actually is holding a gun too, but I kind of thought it was funny to crop it over a little bit to make it look like Rachel was in charge there. And she's like, yeah, you better not act up. Smile. He's always happy. Billy's always a happy guy. I always see him smile. But anyways, happy birthday week to Billy. And I'm going to go ahead and finish here with the word. Yahweh, we thank you for the opportunity to come before you. We just thank you that we're able to meet, to hear your words, to speak your words. We thank you for what you put upon our heart, that we're able to walk out as a beacon before a dark world and be able to shine a bright torch for you. And that we give the glory is for you, Yahweh, that we are nothing more than a mirror of what you put upon us. That just as you referred to as the water is the mirror of the face-to-face or the man's heart, that we are the mirror of your glory and your goodness. As you shine this upon us, that this is what we reflect out, that the people who see that, that they will see this in the mirror, that they will see these things of you, and that we'll be able to shine out you, to be able to shine out your Son. And we thank you, Christ, for the price that you paid for us, that we are fellow heirs, and that we have the authority of your name, and that we are able to do all the things that you have done, that you had done on earth, and that you are alive and well, and that there will be a day that you will call, and that we will meet you. We thank you for that, and we just thank you for the words that you give upon us, Yahweh, that we're able to speak these, and you speak this all in your Son's name, Christ Jesus. My sons and daughters, straighten the path, straighten the crooked areas of your life, that I may be able to direct you, that I will steer you clear of the things that hang you up and stop you. There will be ups and downs and hills and valleys, for you are in a fallen world, but in my light, you will go with favor, and great favor will I put upon you, that upon these things that you will find streams, and you will find respite, and you will find peace, and peace that is overcoming you, that will relinquish your tired nephesh. Your soul will be strengthened as you are in these things, even upon those where you find yourself upon a hill, that if you are in my favor, that in my favor, that you will rejoice, and you will rejoice for the things that I've given you, even in the times of anguish or in the times of trial, that upon me, that you will know that my word is in you, and that my promises are faithful, and that I am diligent to see you through as you are walking in my way, and that you will have reward, and you will have great reward, more than you can possibly imagine, as you stand fast and hold to the principles and my commandments as you walk forward.